All right, how's everybody doing this morning? Good? Excellent, excellent. Hopefully you had a great session this morning and everybody had a good time at the party thing last night and not poorly this morning. I'm ready to get into some good stuff here this in our session. So if you were in my session yesterday where we started talking about application insights, I probably hinted that we were going to get into a lot more detail today. So that's really what today's session is all about. We're going to be drilling into how to use Application Insights and the data that Application Insights presents and makes available to you to make really intelligent and informed decisions about your application and about your product so that you can do the right thing going forward. For those of you who maybe weren't here yesterday, my name is Peter Provost. I'm a group program manager on the Application Insights team in the U.S., we also have some of my friends and colleagues over here. You guys wave. Say hi. Okay. And I'll be pointing them out again as we get closer to the end in case we get to questions or any other things like that. And, of course, we're all going to be down at the booth all afternoon. So if you have further questions or you want to drill into anything and maybe try some stuff out, we can help you out down there. All right. So make data-driven improvements to your application with Application Insights. Click. There we go. All right, so I'm going to go through a few sections here in the next 75 minutes. First, I'm going to do a quick overview of Application Insights, the product. And this is for people who perhaps weren't in my session yesterday, and I won't spend at nearly as much time as I did yesterday, but to just give you a general overview of what the product's all about to set the context for what will come after. At that point, then, I'm going to go into four main sections that are particularly about leveraging data and using data to make your app better. Of course, as you saw yesterday, Application Insights does more than just these things. We've got a whole host of capabilities around detailed performance and diagnostics and all of the stuff that comes from drilling down deep into the nitty-gritty guts of the bits of the application. But really, this is about decision-making and having the data you need to make good decisions about your product and how you improve the product going forward. So I'm going to go through some capabilities around real user monitoring, synthetic monitoring, then we're going to talk about custom telemetry and metrics, and then we're going to get into logging and log search. Now, I have a lot of demos and a lot of code, and I'm going to be in Visual Studio and coding and showing you exactly how these things work, unlike yesterday where I was kind of doing those 5,000-foot flybys at high speed. So we're going to be getting into the details and actually looking at stuff. So, again, the price of light is less than the cost of darkness. I said this yesterday. It costs you more to be ignorant of what is happening with your users and with your application than it does to invest to get that data, to get the important data. Arthur Nielsen, you know, created the Nielsen ratings, which in the U.S. has been the success or failure of many a TV show. But let's move on. So, again, we know that building successful apps is hard, and so as we look at the competitive aspect of this particular slide and we think about the competitive nature of the environment and how many apps are failing and how fast applications are coming to market, how fast they're shipping and how fast they're deploying, everybody's shipping apps constantly. We at Application Insights ship every week. The service the size of ours, we redeploy every Wednesday or Thursday. Which has been interesting for me given that my talk yesterday was Wednesday and today was Thursday, so we kind of had to coordinate that carefully. But yes, we ship every Wednesday and Thursday. And many apps are shipping even more frequently than that, updating every day. And you can go all the way to the far extreme in some of the really extreme DevOps environments like GitHub and others, which are shipping and deploying their system hundreds of times per day. And so we've got to have that data-driven decision-making. So again, I'm going to point this out only to remind us that you know, we've got this ALM cycle, cycling the development and then around and producing and then feeding your backlog and coming back. And of course, if we're thinking about using data to drive the decision-making of our application, right, we are really most interested up here in what decisions do we make in prioritizing our backlog. Right? The backlog ultimately feeds the development side. As whether we're using agile practices or even more traditional practices, if we're doing continuous delivery, we still have a backlog that is our intended work that we want to go forward with. And we have to feed that with information. And the information has to come up this side. So This is where I'm going to be focusing most of my attention in the talk today, is how do we have actionable and contextual information to resolve incidents and to inform the backlog, and how do we prioritize and validate the investments based on this real data? So this is where we're going to be focusing so that we can think about how to get ourselves up there to make sure that as we develop and deliver this product quickly and rapidly, we're always making the right investments at the right time. So again, application insights, more overview for just a few of you. So we try to look at the entire application stack. We've got devices and browsers and PCs up here at the top, ultimately people above them, feeding down into the various back-end services in a modern application that make it all up, all the way down into the data tier. And we need to be collecting telemetry at all of these places and using that to make informed decisions. And in application insights, of course, the telemetry comes from all of these, feeds into our system, where we process it and analyze it and do all of the necessary complex processing over it. We've got Hadoop and stream processing and machine learning stuff all going on against this data to start assembling it and getting it ready for you. And then we can present it back to you in these kinds of views, via very easy to consume, easy to understand views, in near real time. So there are five different kinds of telemetry that we think about in Application Insights. Right, we have our outside-in monitoring, and we'll be talking about that a little bit later on this morning when I get to the synthetic monitoring side. We have observed user behavior. This is a very important aspect of what we're going to be talking about today. How are our users using the app? What are they getting from it? Where are they failing? Where are they succeeding? And what can we learn about that? Developer-emitted traces and events. This one is one that we get a lot of questions about and always have, is how do I emit custom data, custom information for me? Because ultimately, we can do a lot of inference by looking at request and response streams, by looking at page views, automatic telemetry emission and collection. But only you really know what the measures are that matter to your business. The measures are that are meaningful to you. And you can perhaps infer KPI style measures and those measures that are really important to you from the automatically collected data. But it's all that much better if you can emit things that are very specific to you and allow you to track like stages through a sales funnel or stages of engagement, or perhaps if you're allowing customers to opt into certain capabilities further on down the road, understanding where they're dropping out, where they're failing out, what might be causing it. And so you can emit your own custom telemetry. Of course, developer-emitted traces are also invaluable for diagnosing and for debugging. We've all been doing that style of debugging since we started programming. Of course, we have our observed application behavior, which is where our agents are sitting and monitoring the app for you. Those also can provide us some of the usage information that we get and some of the data that we'll use to make decisions. And then infrastructure and performance, typically the performance counters about the system and the environment where our app lives. These are going to be less relevant to us today, but are clearly an important aspect of the information that Application Insights collects for you. Okay. Now, just a quick request from you all. If you have questions about something I'm saying, don't be afraid to just yell out, hey, I have a question, because I'm probably, for a lot of it, going to be coding, going to be at the laptop looking down, which is going to make it harder for me to see if anybody does have a question. So don't be afraid. Don't be shy. Just holler out. And, of course, I'll repeat the question back for everybody else. Okay. So final kind of review slide before we start getting into some of the scenarios here. We look at the Application Insights product family and look at this capability set in terms of kind of three main scenarios. Identify and triage is where you're being made aware of and then making an initial informed decision about the relative importance of something that's happening in your app. It may not always be an error or a failure. It may be a change in user behavior. It may be a change in performance, either good or bad. These are things you want to be aware of so that you can then make an informed decision about what to do. For example, your server load going down might imply, right, if everything's getting faster and easier, well, one of the things you're going to want to think about is, does that mean I can actually perhaps scale back my investment in hardware? But if I'm going to be doing that, that means I've lost customers. So now you want to go dig into the customer side and try to figure out what's causing it and come back at it from the other way. So you want to be balancing that back and forth. Of course, diagnose and solve, right, is kind of the lifeblood of classic APM solutions, where we're thinking about issues and errors and failures and mistakes and being able to get that kind of data and use that to effectively fix problems as they come up. And then learn and improve. And this is, again, where the majority of today's talk is going to be, is we're going to be talking about how to use the data to make intelligent decisions, to make well-informed and educated decisions about how to make our apps better. Now, I'm going to stop right here for just a quick second because there's a couple questions that have come up in the hallway and in the booth, and I realized I didn't make it very clear yesterday. In the talk yesterday, and again also today, I'm going to be mostly talking about and showing you ASP.NET web apps. But we've had people asking us about other kinds of platform supports, and I don't have a slide for it, so I just want to talk to it real quick. First of all, yes, of course, we are going to be supporting a whole breadth of platforms going forward. And if you look at the previous version of Application Insights in the Visual Studio Online portal, we had some of that already there. And as we're starting to move into our new portal experience, we're bringing more of those things along. We're also seeing community development. There has been a community project created for Node. And I believe there's one in the works going for some Ruby on Rails. And we are committed to delivering for all of the major device platforms. And that even includes Windows desktop apps. So I can't give you a perfect timeline for when those things are going to occur, but I can tell you that we are absolutely going to be bringing those capabilities on board. What we have right now primarily is about ASP.NET apps, and that's allowed us to build out the guts of the system and to build out all the primary user experiences for the majority of customer problems, because we're all on the web. Even when we're using devices, the web is still a very important part of what we do. So it allows us to provide the biggest bang for the buck here at the beginning. Reminder that Application Insights is still in preview. We are still very actively developing this product, and it does change week to week. So I want to encourage you guys to try it out, to play it, to use it in your apps. And in fact, I've got a slide at the end to talk about how you can engage with us to get us some feedback and to join up kind of with the community of Application Insights users and help us move the product forward. Okay. So let's dive right in here. The best data that we can get about our application and about what's happening in our application comes from the real people who are using it. This quote just made me laugh, so I had to share it with you. It wasn't actually Charles Schulz who said it. If you look this quote up online, you'll find people saying Charles Schulz said this. But no, actually, Charles Schulz writes the Peanuts comic strip, Charlie Brown and Snoopy. And Linus said this. Right, and of course, that's not at all that surprising for Linus, but we really need to be thinking about the people who are using our app and understanding them and what they're doing. That's really what's going to give us the most bang for the buck, the most information. So if we're going to be enabling you to build these better applications with all this zero effort and all this zero ambient, we've got to be able to get data directly from our users. We've got to be able to pull that user data in, try to figure out what they're doing and look at what they're doing. And you'd be surprised, actually, and I'm going to show you in just a second, how much we can get with the out-of-the-box telemetry with very little custom code, custom configuration. So when we start talking about real user monitoring, we're really talking about what is typically passive. In other words, not a significant amount of extra code required, perhaps even none, by the developer. So you don't really have to do a whole lot to your app to make this possible. And we want to be able to collect real information about their experience. We want to understand when things are going well for them, where they're going, what they're doing, and be able to make informed decisions about that. So, sorry, these are new for me. I've only just had to start wearing glasses, so I'm still trying to get used to this. Okay. So, let's get into this. All right. So here we are in the Application Insights preview portal, much as we were yesterday. I'm going to zoom it one more click just so you guys can see it. Everybody at the back, see it okay? All right. So when we were first looking at this yesterday, I just kind of quickly scrolled through and pointed out some of the things that we were seeing. And I want to spend a little bit more time now getting into the capabilities that we have here and think about how we can use this to make some educated decisions about our app. We looked here at the application health section, And we're already starting to get some information that is quite interesting for us in thinking about how the user's experience is going with our application. The client processing time of 398 milliseconds is already starting to tell us something. And I can move my mouse along here and start to see when it's really slow, 961, 329, kind of sitting there in that 300 range, a couple of nice fast ones here, slowing back down again. So this is already starting to give me a sense of what that user experience is like. And I can correlate that back, as I said yesterday, to potential causes, whether it's first cause or root cause, in the server information. But I'm already starting to see that we're occasionally getting these spikes of client processing slowdown. Now we can click into this, and it's going to take us over and start letting us look at the specific data around this. So we can see here the client processing time, we're now getting a little bit more. We're getting the send request, receive response, and page load on the network time. So we can start to look at the various breakdowns of how the actual client data is being handled in the browser and start to get a sense of what's really going on here. We also can see that our browser exception count is nil. That's good. Browser exceptions can really slow down the rendering experience for the user. Our page views are pretty low in this time period, so we'll have to take a look at that here in just a second. It looks like we got a whole spike of them all at one time. It was probably me. And if we wanted to, we can now go in and take a look at, not that one, I'll come back around the other way. We can take a look at what the page load times are by URL. You can see we're seeing here now, how is the user engaging with the various pages? How much time is it taking them? And do we have fast pages? Do we have slow pages? How many counts are we seeing? Now, we're going to come back to the counts one here in just a minute. But we're already starting to get a glimpse of what's going on. But again, this was part of our overview kind of application health experience. If we really want to get into understanding the user, we're going to want to come at this from a very user-focused direction. So I'm going to start scrolling down. I'm going to go past the performance section, past the diagnostics section, and get down here into usage analytics. Now, if we take a look here, we can see that before I do anything, we already are able to see that I have 8.4 thousand sessions and 8.4 thousand users. Well, I can already start to make some inferences there that roughly every user is having one session. This is probably not a healthy situation. I have a customer retention problem. My customers aren't staying, they're not sticking. So it might be interesting for us to see if we can figure out why. We also can see our page views. So 673 are hitting the home page. Some of them are addressing the index page directly. Some are not. 618 are hitting the error page. That's strange. Right, almost as many people as come to our home page are hitting the error experience. So clearly we have a bug that's hitting everybody. And then look at this, a very significant drop-off into the depth of the site. The number of people drilling down into employees and details, service tickets, customers, is just going flooring, heading straight to the floor. So we're having a significant drop-off in our engagement. Customers are just not sticking around, not investing any time to get into what's going on. So they're coming, they're finding us, but they're not drilling in and going any deeper. So perhaps we can start to explore what's going on here. So I'm going to click on this sessions chart here, which is going to open that same section up over here on the side, and let me see a little bit more detail. First of all, I noticed that almost everybody who's coming to my site is coming using IE9. We don't have anybody using 10 or 11, which starts to tell us a little bit about perhaps the class of user we're getting. We're getting predominantly users maybe in the enterprise sector, or maybe running on older operating systems. Well, let's take a look. We can see operating systems. Yep, almost everybody's coming in on Windows 7. All right, we don't have very many people using Windows 8. We don't have anybody at all hitting it from a mobile browser. So maybe we have some rendering problems or adoption problems, or we're not showing up in the various search results, or we just perhaps don't even choose, we choose not to have capability there, but that's a significant opportunity lost. Almost everybody's coming in at this 1024 resolution in case we're having rendering issues. Now, we might want to ask some different questions of this data. And if I click on the chart here, you'll notice that this lets me now look at all of the various facets and things that I can choose to filter on. Sometimes when you turn on one, it grays out some of the others as a result of the data not necessarily sharing the same units across the axes, so I may have to turn things on and off. Now, I can look at the number, by session, how many of these people are authenticated users. So they're actually logging in, participating in our system, so I'm going to turn that on. And the chart on the left-hand side will update. None. So we have nobody coming to our site, registering and logging in. Our retention is significant, is very much in trouble. We're not getting people to stay. Now, if we want to, we can look at some of the other stuff that's in here as well. I'm just going to clear all the metrics out for a second and take a look at a few other things. So how long is the browser page load taking? All right, so we can see here across the times, the total page load average, right, is running in the 500-600 millisecond range. Now, how much of that is client processing time? Okay, so now we can see the client processing time is taking up a significant chunk of the page load time. So it's not a network traffic. It's not that the assets that are coming down from the server are heavy and are slowing the browser down. It's in fact that the browser is spending a significant amount of time doing rendering. There's a lot of script code running that's really taking up most of that 600 milliseconds. And we can confirm that by looking at some of these other measures. Page load network connect time. And you can see there's very, very little happening down here. Look at the receive response. That one's also going to be low. All right, so we're able to see these, correlate them with each other because they're all charting together on the same graph and identify where we think our problems are and what our end-up user experience is like. And this is all based on real user interactions. These are not based on synthetic tests. These are not based on load tests. These are actual customers coming and visiting our site, which means we know that this data is valid. We know that this represents a real base of our customers. And this data is being made available to me simply by the capabilities that are in the Application Insights ASP.NET built-in capabilities. So by either checking the box or right-click and adding, like I showed you yesterday, I'm going to get these capabilities. We'll be doing it again in a moment when we get into some of the coding. I'm just going to start from an empty new web app so you guys can see that stuff again. Let me turn some of these off now. Now, we might be interested to see, we saw there were zero exceptions over there, but I wonder, are we getting perhaps failures in our dependencies? Could that be slowing things down? Because sometimes dependencies aren't necessarily affecting rendering time. We are seeing some. In fact, there's a pretty ugly spike of them right here. We might want to go drill into that in just a moment. Are we getting any exceptions on the server? I would be surprised if, we're probably getting a few, but I don't think we're getting too many. I'll look at that, the exceptions are at zero, okay? I don't believe we saw any failed requests back on the overview page, but let's just confirm. Again, we're trying to figure out what's really causing this slowdown for the customers here. All right, so I left two nulls turned on, so nothing there. All right. Now, we know that almost all of that 600 milliseconds was taking place in the browser, in the client rendering time. So I'm going to skip past things like performance counters, which are telling me server load issues, dependency calls on the server, things like that, and start to look maybe at more of some of these usage situations. Because again, we saw that people were hitting our homepage, hitting our index page, and we're not really going much deeper. What can we do to understand that better? Well, again, we saw that our authenticated user count was zero, and that's clearly a problem. So I wonder, are we having a staying problem? So let's go take a look at page views, which I think we saw before. Okay, so there's our page views, but I wonder what our durations look like. How long are people staying? Minutes, that's strange. So they come and they spend an hour on the homepage. That is odd, and we might want to go drill into that. And the session duration is probably similar, because again, we saw that typically your average session was staying on a single page. Oh, we're not getting session duration information. Okay. So one of the ones that we saw that we wanted to look at here just a second ago, client processing time. Where was it? Sessions render up here. Oh, are the demo gods biting me again? Nope, there we go. Okay. So a couple of other things I wanted to point out. Sometimes, depending on the data type that you're looking at, you may find yourself wanting to chart things differently and under different forms. So here I'm using area charts, and these two particular chart types, this area chart type doesn't really work very well for these kinds of data. So I might actually find that this is a better form for me. And I see this dip happening here, which is kind of interesting. And you can see that I can mouse over these dots and actually see exactly where they are, both in time and in X. The X and Y axis lines appear to help me find those points. I can start to see exactly what's going on here on Wednesday the 29th. Now, if I wanted to zoom in on that time frame and look at it a little closer, I'm just going to go and change this. So Wednesday the 29th, let's look at the last 24 hours. And it's going to now block my time in. Instead of looking out 30 days, we're going to be looking out just for the last day. I think I've made it unhappy. Let's do this one instead. All right, so now we're able to zoom in and see a little bit more. I'm sure one of the things you're all thinking is, why can't I just click on the chart and zoom? And I'll just tell you, soon. We're working on it. Of course, that's the experience that we would all expect, just click and drag. We just don't have it in there quite yet. But now I'm able to see a lot more detail as I take a look at this stuff about what's going on here with my users, what they're really doing. And are there certain days or are there even certain times where things are going strange? Looks like that spike, let's change this even to 30. So here's that spike occurring up to 50. Switch it back to line. Oops. So we can see that spike's occurring right there, 51 counts. So as you can see, we're able to drill in and get a lot of this detail. Now we also can, as I showed you yesterday, we can explore deeper into the data sets by asking very specific questions of the data and actually going through the search experience. We'll be hitting a lot more on that when I get to the log search section a little bit later on. So I'm not going to spend much time here right now, but I wanted you to know that when you see these data grids like this, you can click them and then start to drill into the search on that data set. And most of the time, supposed to be all of the time, it will pre-populate that search query based on the value that you clicked on. It's just not quite there yet. And I'm going to take just a second and kind of use that to make a different point. I'm going to be showing you a bunch of stuff today that is, you know, very much in preview. And by that I mean when we get to some of the sections later on, I'm going to be showing you things and showing you how to collect the data, how to send that data in, showing you that it's there. But the experience for consumption is still coming. And so we're going to occasionally find ourselves wanting. And so we're going to be wanting to hear back from you about what you would like to see in the consumption of some of these data sets, because the UX for these things are still coming on in a lot of places. Are we getting an API to query this yourself? So you want an API access to query directly into the data sets? So it won't be that directly, because the data isn't in a form that is inherently queryable like that. Now, what we are working on is a set of experiences that allow you to basically set up an export, a continuous export that puts it in a form that is consumable by you by pushing it out of our repository and into like an Azure storage section. And by setting that up, then you can set up Power BI or whatever other capabilities you want that run against that. But the data as it exists in our back end isn't really something that's inherently queryable from tools like that, because we've got it in various places like Elasticsearch and Hadoop and other places. So opening that up in a way that would be directly consumable is challenging. So instead, we're going to kind of basically make it so that you can have a continuous export running. That's a little bit further on down the road this year or early next, but that is absolutely something we have teams working on right now. And thank you for just yelling out like that. I appreciate it. Okay. So we've been looking and seeing the various things we can do with user data here. And this was just the automatically collected user data. And we were already able to see that we have some problems in our browser rendering. Right, half a second of rendering time is not ideal. It's not terrible. We've certainly seen slower. We've certainly seen faster. But we know that we can now start to go and investigate that and understand a little bit more about what's happening. And you know how we would go into investigating that is some of the stuff we'll come to in one of our later sections here today. All right. So that's what we have in the product right now. There's a lot more stuff coming. There will be some capabilities. I had a gentleman earlier asking me, can I see the usage, the users and their geographic location presented on a map? We certainly want to see map controls and various other chart mechanisms like that to allow you to explore the data differently. So things like that are further on down the road. Of course, we've got the geographic information already here in many cases. So if I go to the users themselves instead of sessions, you can see here on the side we're getting users by country or region data at the bottom. Once this page finishes rendering, there we go. So I can see my 8.4K users, 2,400 page views, and you can see here is the US and Spain and one person from Ireland. So Spain is probably me over the last couple days playing around with it, but the majority of our users are coming in through the US like this. Okay. So of course you'd like to see that in a map. That would just make sense. All right. Let me back out here. And I'll put it right here because we're going to be coming right back there. Okay. So kind of understanding some of the real user monitoring that we can do just out of the box. As you can see, there's a lot of data in there, and we have a lot more user experiences that we intend to create to start making this more and more useful and start giving you more and more insight into what's happening there. We've got, at this point, huge amounts of data coming in, and we're constantly building new experiences for the consumption of it, for analyzing and understanding it and cross-correlating that with all of the other bits of data that we have. So again, when I get to the end and we start talking about engagement with you and hearing from you, please take advantage of that and let's talk more. Okay, so synthetic monitoring is kind of that outside-in experience, right? You guys have maybe seen me talk about unit testing and functional testing before, and I've probably even said this myself on stage. Any code that cannot be tested is inherently flawed. I think I might have said it even stronger, like any code that cannot be tested should be deleted. But that's because when I was a dev manager, I was kind of guilty of that every now and then. No unit tests equals deleted code. But I don't do that anymore. But when we start to think about testing of web code, one of the things that we can do is we can test things from the outside. And synthetic testing is kind of your first line of defense to detect an outage or a failure in your web app. It's always on, it's always watching, and it's basically a set of points of presence around the world that are actively monitoring your site from the outside. And we can set those up in a couple of different ways. We can set those up with a ping test, which is the simplest form. It takes only a few seconds to create, and we will create one here in just a moment. Or you can actually create much more complex multi-step web tests using Visual Studio or even Fiddler. And I'll show you both of those techniques as well for creating a multi-step web test that runs from these geographically distributed points of presence to monitor your site from the outside. And let's just go ahead and dive right in. Okay, so here we are back on our site. And I want to just show you really quick the site itself. So here we have the site running. And we'll go up to the home page here. So this is that ticket tracking site that we've been using here at TechEd and Build and conferences like that for quite a while now. It's a good one that we've got a nice code base for to mess with. Now, I've got a set of web tests running against this app. And you can see here what I'm seeing is the results from those web tests and as they're coming back. So we're generally getting this in the neighborhood of, 1,600, 1,700 millisecond response time from the points of presence that I have set up. I have one outlier up here sitting at 9,400 milliseconds. So that one's not very good. We might want to go look at that. Now, if I click through this one, it's going to take me into my web test view. And you can see it's giving me this availability trend, so I can see I'm generally pretty good. I've had a dip, and I'm running around 97% availability. I can see my server response time and how that's trending along here. And we can look at the web test itself. So this is the web test that was created for me automatically when I created the site. I just said, yes, I'd like a ping test, please. And we will create another one just to demonstrate. And here you can see now the scatter plot of it across a longer period of time and getting much more detail in it now. I don't have any failed tests, which is good. And you can see this web test is configured to be pinging from Amsterdam, San Jose, California, and Hong Kong. So I'm hitting it from a pretty broad spread around the world so I can start to get a sense of how it's behaving in those different times. Now, if we wanted to create a new one of these, let's take a look at that. So I'm going to go back over to the site, and let's say we want to create one that is going to ping the customers or the employees page. Let's do this. So I'm just going to grab this URL on my clipboard, come back over to here, and say plus. And I'm going to say demo number one. It's going to be a URL ping test. I probably can't use the one symbol. There we go. And I'm going to paste that URL that I had right there into it. Now I can select my locations. So let's leave Texas, and let's go with Singapore this time and Dublin, just to pick a pair of different ones. Okay. Right now, it is set to be considered successful on an HTTP 200 response code. Now, if I want, I can also do a content match. So I can say it's 200, and I have to get back a particular bit of substring text within the response body. But I'm going to skip that for now. Go ahead and leave it as a 200. Now, the other thing we can do is we can have alerts. Now, alerts are turned on by default, and we should talk a little bit about what alerts are. Alerts allow, we'll have the system basically email me or SMS me when the site gets in trouble. Now, the default sensitivity is set to low, and the tooltip on this is a little small, so I'll just read it. Low alerts you when all locations fail within 15 minutes. So that's a full-blown outage. Medium alerts when at least half of the locations fail in 10 minutes. High alerts anytime a test fails. So I'm going to pick it up to high just for fun. Now, the default characteristic here then is low, so tell me if it's all down. The other default is to email the service admins. But if you would rather have it mail specific people, and I'm going to do that here for our purposes, just have it mailed to one of my test emails. Cool. So I've set the alert up now to run against that. And we'll come back and look at that test here in just a minute. We'll let it run now. So I'll just say create. Now, there's a little bit of background processing going on. Of course, it's actually sending some messages out to these points of presence around the world and telling them spin up this test and here's how it's configured and things like that. And in just a second, it will appear here in the list at the bottom. And shortly there, shortly thereafter it'll start to run. You can see here it is. It hasn't run yet. We don't have any data coming back from it, but it will. So we'll let that one go for a minute. And let's talk instead about multi-step tests. These are often more interesting, where you can start to actually explore sequences through your app. Instead of just ping, are you there? Okay, I want to be able to hit the home page and click this button and go to that page and go to here and see that page. And of course, Visual Studio Ultimate has this wonderful web test capability that lets you create these big, complex web tests. But before we jump into Visual Studio, I wanted to show you an interesting little trick that that some people know about. Fiddler. Fiddler is a tool that most of us web developers have used before, right? It's effectively a proxy that observes all the web traffic. So I'm going to put Fiddler up there, and I'm going to put the website on over here. And let's see, I will say monitor. I'm going to tell Fiddler, please, to monitor only this one. Oh, stay over there. And then I'll clear this out. Turn off capturing for just a moment while I get it started here. And let's get us to the right place. Oops. All right, so here we are on the route. I'll go ahead and turn capturing back on in Fiddler. Refresh the page. So we can see Fiddler's detecting all that traffic. I'm going to click through to tickets. Then I'm going to click through to one of the tickets. And then I'm going to tell Fiddler to stop. Okay, so at this point, Fiddler has recorded this sequence. And I can very simply say, export all sessions. Now, if I wanted to, I could go and be selective and picky and pick out only the things I might care about in that list. But I'm just going to go ahead and say dump it all. And I'm going to dump it as a Visual Studio web test. Let's see. I will put it, just put it on my desktop. Excellent. So now on my desktop is this web test file that we can, just to prove to you that it really is a web test file, I'm going to go ahead and open it up here in Visual Studio. I have a web and load test project already created here, and we'll come back to take a look at that here in a second. It of course came with a test built in. Just get rid of that one, and then I'm just going to say add an existing, and I'll go and pick that web test up off the desktop that I created. There it is, and we can now take a look at that test and see that. Exactly how it works. So here we have, right, that page got hit, then this one, which caused those headers, and it's going to have a bunch of if checks that it's already put in it. All of this is expected to behave, and et cetera, et cetera. Here's the test. I can even run it here in Visual Studio. And we can see the little browsers happening at the bottom. Pages are all running. Now here's an interesting thing, right? Here it's actually hitting our own App Insights tracking services. And look at that, it ran through and it passed successfully. Well, I think it might be more fun if we made it fail, don't you? So let's do this. Come back over to here, back over to Fiddler. We know that we saw an error when we were navigating the site before, so let's just turn the tracking back on. Let's go and see if we can get that error to come, because I think it was in the reports section. Oh, look at that, red line in Fiddler. Okay, good. Turn off the capturing again. Export it again. And let's bring it back into Visual Studio just to take a look at it and see it run here. It's always a good idea to confirm that these things do what you expect using the test runner. But of course, another way to run them is to push them up to Application Insights. So here we have the new one running, and let's let it rip. Oops, got two here. There we go, run. Now this one I think is gonna fail when it hits that 500. There it is. See, here's the 500 right there. These tracking steps are slowing it down a bit. And we can see that our test failed. So we now expect that this test will fail when pushed up to Application Insights. So let's go ahead and do that next. I'm going to come back over to the Azure portal, back into our web test section, and I'm going to say add, just like I did before, but instead of, let me delete the other one. Sorry, we only let you have two web tests right now. That's a point in time scaling situation, but so it's still a little annoyed with me for having the one I created earlier. So we'll just come back around from the front side. I did tell them no deployments on Friday, right, Marav? No deployments while I'm demoing. Okay. Back into web tests. There is only one web test. We will add a new one. And this time I'm going to say it is a multi-step web test. We'll call this demo 2. And I'm going to go and find that file that I created. There it is. Nope, it's the one on the desktop. There it is. Okay, so that's the web test file that has all the multi-steps that are recorded from Fiddler. I'm going to, again, select a set of locations to run it from. Let's do Dublin and Hong Kong. So we have the US, Europe, and Asia. Turn our alerts on again. I'm going to do the same thing I did before. Send it to my test email here. Don't bother sending emails to that address. I never read them. Okay, good, we'll create it. And now we will let this one run. Now, the nature of these web tests is that they run on kind of a periodic interval and they're scattered around the globe. So rather than having us sit here and waiting to see the results from that come in, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna move on to the next section of the talk and then I'll come back and we'll take a look at this after it's had a little bit of time to kind of sit and digest and think for a bit. Any questions about web tests before I move on? All right, so you saw me creating them in Fiddler, editing them, and modifying them in Visual Studio. Of course, if you already have Visual Studio Ultimate, then, of course, it has the web test recording capability, hooks right up to the browser, and you don't even need to use the Fiddler step. But I like to show people the Fiddler step so that they know it exists. In fact, you can also see some articles about that up on the various blogs up on MSDN, and it's been talked about a fair amount, so I'm not sharing any crazy secrets here. It's a neat trick. Okay, let's hop over here again. Take that off so they don't click on the mic. Okay. So synthetic monitoring then gives us that outside in view, lets us run ping tests, right, just quick, are you there, are you there, or more complex tests to actually test the flows. And we'll look at the results of that failing test here in just a moment. So I mentioned earlier that when we're thinking about telemetry and users and usage, we're very, very interested in understanding how the users are affecting or contributing to or not contributing to the various KPI measures and metrics and the things we care about for our business. Now, as you saw, we can collect a lot of data, and we're going to continue to provide richer and better experiences for analyzing that default collected data. But, of course, there is then the data that matters to you. What does it mean for it to be successful? We used to... back at the beginning of App Insights, we used to talk about a thing we called the cow counter. And the cow counter was the idea that, you know, I have a game and it's on my little device and, you know, part of the game is buying cows. And so I want a cow counter. How many cows are people buying? Okay, well, that's not something that we would ever be able to kind of infer by looking at just general purpose usage data. That's something that you have to say, I know I want to know this. This is important to me. And I'll talk about some examples of exactly how we do that kind of thing. And this is an interesting thought, right? You can have data without information, but you cannot have information without data. So the idea is that we want to be able to collect this data. We want to have the data that's meaningful to us. And for it to be meaningful to us, it's not just data, It has to be information, which means it's relevant to our business, it's relevant to us. So I want to make a point here, and this is an important bit. This last bit here, right, I talk about determining what to track. This is probably where you should spend a significant amount of time thinking carefully. You can, of course, change. It's not a big deal to go and change what you track. And in fact, you will and you should change what you track. But in order to get meaningful, actionable data out of these kinds of systems, any kind of system like this, you have to think very carefully about what is it that you're interested in tracking. In Visual Studio and in Microsoft for a long time, we've had this thing called SQIM. And I'm sure you guys have all seen, when you install a product or start a product from Microsoft for the first time, there's that little checkbox that says, join the Customer Experience Improvement Program, right? In most cases in the past, that has sent to this SQIM system. And as PMs in Visual Studio, you know, I've been in Visual Studio now for 8 years, one of the things that we're always thinking about as we're putting new features into the product is what SQIM data points should we collect? What data points do we want to collect to understand how users are using our product? Because we would then find that if we didn't get the data point right, it was very difficult to answer the questions that we found ourselves later wanting to ask. We've now moved ourselves to more of a continuous delivery model and a flexible model where we actually will define as part of our stories and our requirements and our features, in advance of building them, we'll start to think about what data points do we want to collect in order to know that this feature has been successful. How will we track this feature's usage? So now we're actually starting to collect telemetry, for example, on how many people check or uncheck that little box in the File New dialog in Visual Studio. And if they do uncheck it, what was the state of the world beforehand? Or was it checked by default or not by default because perhaps they were logged in or not logged in? These were important data points for us that were very meaningful to us from the perspective of understanding our adoption funnel, which is really what this stuff all comes down to, is getting customers through that funnel, getting them into your app, using your app, and understanding what they're doing. And so we've collected a number of different telemetry points throughout our Visual Studio code to understand how we're getting customers through that and into and using Application Insights. So you do want to think about that stuff, think that stuff through carefully so that you can make sure you put the right data points into your system. Now, let's jump back over here and I'll show you how to implement custom telemetry collection in your app. All right, so I'm gonna come back over to Visual Studio here. Yep, good. And let's just create a brand new web app. So I'm gonna create a new web app. I'm gonna leave the Application Insights checkbox checked just to give me a little bit of a jump start here. And let's call this 446, just so I can remember it. It's gonna be an ASP.NET MVC. I'm not gonna bother hosting it. So it's gonna unfold the template, pull down any of the various NuGet packages that it might require. Now it's hooking itself up to Application Insights, so it's provisioning an Application Insights resource with the blade. It's getting the instrumentation keys for it, bringing those down, writing them into the configuration file, pulling the Application Insights NuGet packages, et cetera, and setting that all up for us. Excellent. Okay, now that that's done, let's think about what it would look like for us to start wanting to put telemetry, custom emitted telemetry about our application into the code. So we're in an MVC app, so controller is going to be the likely place we're going to want to do this. So I'm just going to jump into the home controller really quick. And of course, the index for the home controller is a pretty good place for us to start because this is the one that we know we're going to hit first when I F5 the app. Now, using the telemetry objects, the SDKs that we have, I can use them either from the server side or from the client side in the JavaScript, and I'll show you both of those. But on the server side, it's actually quite easy, so I'm just going to say var telemetry equals new telemetry client. And this guy is in the Application Insights namespace. And having done that, I can now say telemetry dot, and we can take a look at all the various things I have to choose from here. I can track an event, which is a general purpose occurrence that we want to provide data with. We'll come back to that one in just a moment. If I know an exception occurs, maybe I've got a try-catch loop, I can package that exception up and just send it along. If I just want to send a metric, I can do that. If I am caring about tracking page views, this is particularly valuable in single page apps, right? Because we will automatically track page views where the URL changes. But if you have a single page app where it's all being dynamically rendered and dynamically controlled, and maybe the page has changed from your logical perspective, but we really can't detect it by just looking at the response streams, you can specifically say, here's a page view, and give it the URL for the page view. And then trace is effectively how to manually initiate a log message, and we'll come back to that one in a minute too. So let's just do track event, which is our basic one. Now, the first choice here is some big, ugly, long object. Let's ignore that and say, oh, look, an event name. So my first event, that's what we're gonna call it. Okay, so I can say that happened, and basically what's going to get sent up to Application Insights now is just every time that line of code executes, we're gonna have an indication that it occurred. So it's kind of a counter metric almost, right, which is just it happened. There's no extra data that comes with it. It shows up in the list as an occurrence. Perhaps not so useful. I mean, there are certain situations where that might be nice if you just want to know that somebody clicked on a particular button and there's no extra data that you want to carry with it. That could be useful. But more often, we're probably going to want to send some extra data with it. So one of the overrides here, let's take a look at that again. This one allows me to pass both an event name, so I'll call this my second event, and then two dictionaries, one of properties, and then one of metrics. We can send it all in kind of one bundle. So I'll just call it props and metrics. And I'll have to new those up here in just a second. So let's say props equals new dictionary of string string. I'll fill him in just a moment. And this is string double. Okay, so this is really the bare bones of what it takes to push custom properties and metrics data in through a single call. Of course, there was the metrics call that I could have done earlier, and that would have been a single line if I just knew I wanted to send a number. But oftentimes I'm saying these things are all the same event. This name with this extra bit of data with these quantitative values are the same occurrence, and so I want to treat them as a single send. All right, so now I just, since this is a string string, I can just say val1. Is 1. Okay, so there's my first dictionary filled in, and the second one then is a string double. All right, that'll do. We'll build the app, and then I'll run it so I can show you what's going on here. Now, I mentioned yesterday in the demo that we had that nice little toolbar button at the top in Visual Studio that is going to tell me what's occurring. So I'm going to bounce around in the site here just a little bit, just to kind of exercise things a bit. Okay. Now, when I come back into Visual Studio, you can see right here up top, it's told me that 23 events have been sent to Application Insights. So during that debug session, we were actively watching the application while it was running in my development environment here and keeping track of when those events were being sent so we know they're happening and we can tell you exactly what's going on. I can hit the little drop-down box here and I can say, you know, tell me when that occurs. Then the little pop-up toast will occur. For some reason, mine's over here on the side, probably because I changed all my font sizes. But I also can just see them occurring right here. And of course, if I click this button, it will open the portal up. But before we do that, let's take a look at what we also know about the data sets here. So, of course, the veritable output window, the output window of Doom, which is just full of more information than you could possibly imagine. All of our Application Insights telemetry is also being put here. So you'll notice these that say App Insights telemetry. And if we look, we can see, if I scroll out here, here are my custom metrics getting sent. So there's developer mode going. All of the events that we're sending are basically going out through here. Let's now go back and look at the actual portal itself. So I'm going to click the button. And I called it 446, right? In case it gets stuck. It seems to be occasionally getting stuck for me because of authentication issues between the various Azure directories that I'm using. See if I understand your question. Would operations, I'm assuming you mean a group of people, need an MSDN account to get into production?
Yeah, no, to look at this, to look at this stuff.
Okay, to look at this stuff. Well, you're going to have to have an Azure subscription, whether or not it's MSDN, in order to be able to provision and have the Application Insights resource come into being. Once you have that, you can use Azure Active Directory and the directory services there to add people and to give people access. And it'll still be part of that same account, right? So the authentication problem that I'm having is actually related to that. If we look here underneath my login, you'll see that I have a number of different directories that I'm included within. So this default personal one, that's me. But then this one is a Microsoft one that we use. And so, for example, the demo site that I was showing you guys a few minutes ago was created by people inside of this directory. So I have to switch back and forth between the two directories to get access to the different sites. It's an issue of, you know, multiple organizations, multiple different permission models and permission setups, and so it's not a huge deal, but it is what it is. So I'm going to switch over to the personal directory, which is where that new site was created. I suppose I could have created it in the other one. And if we go and look in Application Insights, there it is, 446. We can see the requests have already been coming in. And see, what do we call these things? My first event and my second event. So not much data here yet. It's still being processed in some cases. So sometimes what we have is we've done the initial processing, and so we have some of the averages coming in, but we still don't have any of the historical timelines. Those will come in over time. But I also can go just immediately straight to this diagnostic search, and I can go and look for events and things like that occurring. We can start to see what's happening, what these are, and we can see my custom events are in there. See where it says custom event? So there's only one event. It's come in a few times. In fact, there it is, my first event, count one, duration one. So that's the first one, the one where I just send it with a string only, right? And then my second event, where's that one? Might not have been processed yet. I did call it that, right? I did. Can you repeat that question, please? Okay, so the difference is between environments, between production and test and int and dev and all those other kinds of things. Right. Yeah, so separating that data. So right now, today, the only mechanism you really have is to set different instrumentation keys in your configuration file. And if you'd like, I can show you guys how to do that because you're not the first person to ask me. So let's just go ahead and take a quick peek. Let me stop the app here for a minute. And we'll have a quick peek at that. So the web config file, or sorry, the Application Insights config file sits here in your project. And it has a bunch of various values in it that are probably not particularly important, but the most important one is this one right here, and this is your instrumentation key. So this is the key that represents this app in App Insights. So if I wanted to set this up like I've done here in development, okay, so this is the development one, and if I wanted to differentiate that from my production environment, all I need to do is I go back over to the Application Insights place, and I'll say I want a new App Insights. It's going to be a web application. And I'll call this my prod one. Go. Resource group is filled in. Good. Okay. All right. So now it's creating up that resource for us. And as soon as it's done loading, I can then go into its properties, get that new instrumentation key, change it in the config file, and it'll go out. So basically, using the same kind of techniques we use to manage the differences between the various database keys and database passwords and things like that, we can do the same kind of a thing with the Application Insights config file for managing between dev and int and test and prod and things like that. So, not sure I understand the question. Oh, for Azure websites? Yeah, so for Azure websites, things are a little bit different. And if you'd like, maybe if you come over to the booth, we can talk to you about what we have there. And we're actually still making a bunch of investments there, and that stuff still is kind of coming along. So I'm not sure exactly what that experience looks like today, but it is a place that we're making active investments going forward. And so we're trying to make this thing easier. And I'll tell you that, you know, as we think long term, what we really would like to enable is for you to be able to have that view of your app, because it's not just dev, test, prod. It might be that my app exists in three or four different data centers, and I want to see the whole, or I want to see the small. And to do that, I have to have differentiation between them. And so we're currently exploring how we can enable that in a way that is sensible and not too crazy to manage and configure. But it's the same problem, though. It's kind of the problem we think of in terms of environments. So anyway, I finished creating this new one. I just want to show you where that key is in case you want to get it. I'm going to hit properties. Here's my instrumentation key. Just hit the button, Control C. I've got the new key. Come back over to Visual Studio, paste it in. And so now this will point to the other place. Now I'm going to undo that because I've got stuff already going in this one here. Okay? All right, so that was a good question. All right, so anyway, you saw that I was able to track metrics, properties, extra data. I can track them kind of as counted events. Now, this is also a point where I want to be completely, you know, upfront and honest with everyone about what we really don't have here yet. We don't really have a very good experience yet for you to perform detailed analytics over your own custom submitted metrics. So you won't get to see charts over your own numbers, over your own metrics, yet. And it's something we're actively working on. Clearly, custom metrics are an important part of this system. And so now that we've got our metrics experience working, we've got all our processing working, and we've got all the other stuff going, we're going to start bringing that custom metrics experience up to the front so that you can also filter not just by the ones that we've built in and know about, but you can filter and chart and graph and save all those things that against your own custom data. So that's coming soon. We're actively working on it right now. And like I said, we deploy every week, so keep an eye on it. Keep checking back. So let's go back and look at that one more time. And then we will jump to the last bit. So now we're seeing three custom events coming through. I can filter this and say, let's only look at the custom events. And it looks like my first event still, so I must have done something wrong. All right. But anyway, lots of investment going on there. This is going to get nothing but better. So let me jump back over to slides for a moment because I want to give you some setup before we get into the code around some of the logging stuff. Because the logging stuff is different but equally important. All right. So log data, general log data, is just a natural part of what developers do. I've called it for years printf style debugging, and it's the first style of debugging that we ever learned to do. So Brian Kernahan, of course, one of the co-inventors of the C language, says that everybody knows debugging is twice as hard as writing a program in the first place. Right, we tend to spend all of our time in the diagnostics phase of development and very little time, perhaps not enough time on the coding side of the front end. But so when we start to think, this isn't just about debugging. Debugging is an important aspect of this. It's also about that we are already using significant amount of logging in our application development. So how many of you guys are using log4net? How about nlog? How about system.trace? Okay, so that was a majority of the hands if I combine those three things together. And this, we always do this. This is, you know, you get to a place where your app is running in a strange environment on another server and another machine you don't really ensure. So you start putting these log statements in. And the environments like nlog and log4net and even system.trace give you these nice ways of filtering and making decisions about how to route and process these messages based on their severity levels. But what if you're already using them, if you're already using nlog or log4net today, you'd probably like to be able to have that data come to App Insights so you can process it, so you can search it and query across it and find it and all that other good stuff from all your places in the cloud or on hosted environments without having to do all that work yourself. So let me show you quickly how that works. And then we'll be almost done. All right, so here we are in the same app I was in before. And I'm just going to jump up to NuGet. And to save myself the search. So if I'm going to go, yeah, let's just do this. Application Insights. Nlog. I'll just use Nlog because it's the one I know off the top of my head. And you can see here's the Application Insights Nlog target. It tells me exactly how to install it. Everybody familiar with NuGet, right? The best way to get libraries and DLLs and things brought into your project? Cool. I like to use the Package Manager console. Of course, you also can do this with the UI that lets you browse and search from there. I'm a command line guy from way back. So it's reaching up and pulling down nlog and pulling down the it actually grabs nlog as well, so nlog and the nlog plugin. It went ahead and injected the configuration for that into my web config. So if we look at the nlog section in here, you can see it's already added the Application Insights target for me, so I don't have to do anything there. And now in my code, suppose I was already using nlog to log various bits of data. I will use nlog exactly as I always have. So in my controller code, I'll just spin up a static. Logger instance of nlog's kind. I'll get rid of all this telemetry tracking for a minute because we're pretending that I'm just using what I've already had. And now I'll just, I'll say logger.log. And it is a log level warning. And here is my message. And I'll put a little number in there just because I know that we can put a formatted string here. All right, so it's just going to write out, this is my message with a random number in it so we can see it change. And I'll go ahead and build again, run again. What did I do? Oh, it helps if you new one up. You guys are supposed to catch me on syntax errors. Oh, yeah, right. Logger.currentClassLogger. There we go. All right. So as this comes up, I'm just going to, rather than refreshing the portal, I just want to show you down here in the output window. we can see that it has now started to emit the NLOG messages out through the Application Insights telemetry system. They're now going up to Application Insights, where we can again search on them and query them and pull that data back out and find it later on. So now you don't have to change your NLOG or your log4net or your system.trace. You just have to include us as basically a listener, and you'll be ready to go. And if you have more on that, more questions on that, please come on down to the booth and we'll happily show you some more. Okay, so I showed this slide yesterday and I want to show it again just to give you guys a heads up, because we do get a lot of questions on this, right? Your data is your data. We don't share it with other people and we don't look at it. And know that, you know, we are storing your data in our secure data centers in the Azure cloud. And if you have questions about trust and security and things like that using the systems I've been showing you here, you can go here. There is also a similar trust center link like this for the Visual Studio Online side of things if you're curious about that. Now, so again, I have kind of a, I have an ask for you, right, is to go and get App Insights and bring it down. If you're using Visual Studio 2013 Update 3, you already have access to this with a checkbox. Just check it on or right-click and say add it. Start using it. Start experiencing it. Start giving us feedback on it. And there's a couple of ways you can do that. Of course, we've got our user voice site. Please go up there, vote, put in new suggestions, put in new comments, let us know what you want. But we're also starting up this AI feedback mailing address. So if you guys are going to try this out and start using it in your apps and using it in your system, this is a great way to get directly in contact with our product managers who are very interested in spending time talking to you and understanding your usage scenarios and getting that feedback from you on what we can do to make this product better. We're still in preview, we're still in very active development, and we're really trying to push this thing forward to make it a great solution for everybody developing in the Microsoft ecosystem for all of the various kinds of apps and platforms and targets that you might want to go after. I missed this slide yesterday, but I want to point out there are a number of other interesting and relevant talks. I'm sure there are more than these four, but these are the ones that I found that look quite interesting. Myself and the rest of my team over there, we will all be down at the booth this afternoon, so please come down and ask us questions. We've got computers down there. We can bring this stuff up. We can play with it, talk about it, and try to figure out other answers to questions we may not have hit today. And bunch more devs and DevOpsy stuff here for you. I'm sure you've seen these in a few other talks. And then I'll just go ahead and end here and say thank you very much and have a great rest of your day.